of the American Journal is on, and I'm very happy to welcome my guest right off the bat, Carlin, can be found at decodetheleft.com, carlin.substack.com. That's K-A-R-L-Y-N.substack.com. She tracks and spies on the left and actually delivers what they're thinking, what they're planning, what they're saying in their private chats. It's really important and powerful work. Carlin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Harrison.
My pleasure. I've been meaning to get you on. I mean, this is your time to shine. What can you tell us about what's going on in Minneapolis and Minnesota at large?
The situation is really bad. And I got to be honest, I kind of thought the winter weather would deter them at the beginning. But now what I'm beginning to understand is like the left is building so much momentum behind the anti-ICE activism that I just don't know what can stop them. And one of the interesting things, Harrison, and I've been listening in to anti-ICE organizing calls across a lot of different groups on the far left almost every single day for weeks. The left is happy and they think they're winning, and they are more excited than ever. And you have to understand, I've been following the far left for about 5 years now. I have never heard them this happy and this excited and this motivated, and they really think they have all the momentum on their side. And I got to tell you, with the way the Trump administration is responding to them, it kind of seems like Trump is very weak in this situation. He doesn't really have a grasp on what is going to be required to stop the problem. We are only going to see more protesting, more noise demonstrations outside of these hotels that we've been seeing. And the really scary part is this. This is not just in Minnesota. The far left right now is trying to work to export all of the different strategies that they're using in Minnesota nationwide. So we already saw hotel protests show up last night in New York. We're starting to see it show up in California. I know it's showing up in Ohio, Missouri, South Carolina. I've even seen ads for Florida, Texas, and even Montana. And so what the far left doing is being phenomenally successful in Minnesota. And it's going to be very dangerous if the Trump administration doesn't get a handle on this to stop it.
How do you think they should get a handle? I mean, because I'm not surprised by that. If I was on the left, I would also be feeling ebullient right now. Like, I'd be feeling like we were winning, because obviously they are. I mean, I don't think there's any debate on that. What would you do? Let's start with the solutions. How would you approach this from if you were Trump?
They need to go in with overwhelming force. That's the only way I can think to describe this. That is what the left understands, is overwhelming force. So, for example, I've been watching these hotel protests that where they're going and they're finding the hotels that ICE officials are staying in, and they're going and banging pans and making all sorts of noise outside these hotels. Here's what happens, Harrison. The left goes and makes a ton of noise for hours. They break things. They destroy property. And then the police show up and they make an announcement saying, hey, you kids better cut it out and go home. And they don't cut it out and they keep going. And then the police say, hey, you guys, we're going to arrest you if you don't cut it out. And then, you know, there's some tear gas fired, and maybe the police even catch a few people and put them in handcuffs. But then what happens immediately after that is the police let them go. They literally let them go. They're not really arresting anyone. They let them go. And then the entire group reconvenes and starts making noise again until the police show up again. And it's like, until these people are put in jail and kept off the streets and prevented from doing activism, we are only going to see this continue to expand and grow and get much worse than it already is.
Again, it seems like an inescapable conclusion from the trajectory that things are going now. And of course, it just, when you really think about it, it becomes like overwhelming when you realize, like, even if you arrest them, the judges are probably going to let them out. The prosecutors are probably on their side. I mean, what do you do when the entire local government seems to be hijacked by these radical groups? I mean, the Signal chat is revealed. A lot of people very close to not just the local city government, but the state government are actively involved, actively communicating with the rioters and, of course, helping them out however they can. So, I mean, really, this is a very, very difficult situation to deal with if you're trying to deal with it through the proper channels of the local government. They're not going to capitulate. I mean, they're not going to help, right?
No, they're absolutely not going to help. And that's why I say Trump needs to go in with overwhelming force. And it gets even scarier than that, because a lot of these groups, I mean, this organizing has been going on for over a year. Yeah. And so we're only going to see it get worse.
More on the other side. Quick commercial break. We'll be back in 90 seconds. More with Carlin Borischenko, decodetheleft.com, carlin.substack.com. You got to listen to these people. They're telling you the truth when they say they're trying to overthrow the country and want to kill you. They're not lying. They lie about everything else.
Energy shots have been all the rage for decades because they really work. But most of them are full of dyes and toxins. toxic stimulants and have huge crashes. We set out to develop a product at theelixirstore.com that has all the very best adaptogens, nootropics to biohack your body and not just help your brain, but every cell in your entire body. We've done it, ladies and gentlemen. Mind Fuel is next level with no letdown, no crash. It is very strong. So I take half the shot in the morning, half in the afternoon, and it's just amazing. And again, the effects go on for days and days and days because these are super nutrients that are in Mind Fuel. For the time I have here, I can't tell you all the incredible ingredients. So go to thealexjonesstore.com and look at what is in it. And of course, proprietary herbal ingredients as well. Go now to thealexjonesstore.com and secure your Mind Fuel and be the reason we'll always be on the air. Thank you so much for your support. If you love our other products, you're going to love Mind Fuel.
You're tuned in to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. My guest is Carlin Boroshenko, decodetheleft.com, carlin.substack.com. Again, Carlin, I can't encourage people enough to go follow you on X, go to decodetheleft.com, carlin.substack.com. You do such important work identifying what's happening in the leftist chats, what they're actually saying to each other. And again, I feel, I was saying before you came on, when it comes to May Day, things like that, I feel like you and I are sitting alone up on a ridge watching a train barrel towards a crash. And we're 2 years away and we're going to sit here for 2 years going, slow the train down. You've got to stop it. Why does nobody care about this? Why are the Republicans so incapable of grasping what the left is doing and why they're doing it and how they're doing it? It's like we are constantly surprised with the most obvious stuff. How do we get through to people, Carlin?
I don't know, Harrison, but what I will say, you know, I mean, the good news is that there are more people paying attention than ever. And I do think that people are starting to wake up to the fact that this is a problem. Perhaps they're waking up a bit too late, and I wish they would have woken up years ago, but it is what it is. But on that May Day point, I want to tell you this. So because the left is so motivated and so energized, I think they might be actually trying to move up that schedule for May Day. So, of course, we saw the first mass general strike that the left tried to do in Minneapolis last week on Friday. They did try to export that nationwide with a certain amount of success. They're going to be doing another general strike this Friday coming up, but the far left is already planning for May Day 2026, which is on May 1st. It is a Friday, of course, and they are already planning to do a big nationwide, hopefully for them, prolonged mass strike where they are literally trying to shut down the economy across all sectors. And by all sectors, I mean the teachers' unions are directly involved in this. They want to shut down the schools, not only by doing student walkouts, but by organizing with the teachers unions. The grocers association and unions are involved in this. The auto workers are involved. The airline unions are involved. The AFL-CIO, the SEIU, the Teamsters are involved. Like pretty much every major union is going to be involved in these mass protests. And that's honestly, you know, if Republicans want something they can do, what really needs to happen is there need to be congressional hearings into the political organizing activities of the labor unions, because the labor unions are not about helping employees. They are about far left organizing. And the proof of this is just look at any major leftist protest. The main organizers in all of them are the labor unions. And so I think we are in for a heck of a May Day 2026. I've been on multiple organizing calls where they're already starting to plan for May Day 2026. I was just on one last night with the Sunrise Movement, where they literally have an entire manual that I will be releasing on my Substack today about their organizing plans. The Sunrise Movement is the same organization doing the noise protests outside the hotels in Minneapolis. So it's going to be a wild ride.
Yeah, that's one way to put it. Again, it's just so frustrating that it would be so easy to do something or anything about this, and we just can't get anything done. But man, it must be nice to be a leftist. I mean, it's a win-win for them, right? They get to sort of move their schedule up. They'll try this on May 1st, 2026, and hey, maybe it snowballs, maybe it becomes something really big and it becomes successful and they take down the government. Or it's just a practice run and they get to sort of train their networks and figure out, you know, pros and cons, because obviously nothing's going to happen to them. This is just a training run. It either succeeds, wonderful, and if it doesn't, they get to try again next year. Again, what do we have to do to get people to understand? And tell me if you disagree. We have to intervene. There's no convincing these people to stop. There's no meeting some of these people's demands and they'll be satisfied. We have to physically intervene, stop these people, break up their networks. That's the only option as far as I see it. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong at all. They are not going to stop. They are not going to be deprogrammed. There's no reasoning with these people. And I think the very first step, honestly, is that people have got to start taking the far left a lot more seriously than they've been taking them over the past several years. And this is my constant consternation. I know it's yours too, is that people on the right look at the left and they think they're stupid. They're mentally ill. They don't have jobs. Well, I'm sorry. They do have jobs. They control the labor unions. How do they control the labor unions if they don't have jobs, you idiots? And it's like every time people say stuff like this, they are perpetuating these falsehoods that make it very easy to dismiss the left. This is not a bunch of angry college students that are going to grow out of it. These are people who have been indoctrinated into this ideology since they were 5 years old. They are not growing out of it this time. And by the way, we have an entire teaching pool and two major teachers unions that are also indoctrinated into this ideology and are constantly perpetuating it in the public schools and are facilitating all of this. Even the University of Minnesota last week, I would love to see Trump defund the University of Minnesota, because quite frankly, the University of Minnesota is responsible for a lot of these students that are outside doing this. And guess what? Last Friday for the general strike, over 200 professors at the University of Minnesota canceled classes, held anti-ICE organizing training, and did proactive activism to book out hotel rooms at Hilton hotels so that ICE officers couldn't book them instead. So the colleges and universities are complicit, and Trump would be well advised to pull all federal funding from the University of Minnesota if he wants to shut it down.
Well, there you add it to the list of things that he could do with a stroke of a pen that he's not doing for some inexplicable reason. And you're right. People don't take the left seriously. Like when the Signal chat came out, I mean, it's shocking what's in there. It's crazy that the people, you know, the former campaign manager for Tim Walz is one of the organizers. Like what was exposed, I'm not downplaying, but it's not exactly a surprise for people like you and I. Like, of course these Signal chats exist. Of course this is the level of organization that they have. Of course they're sending manuals out showing how to intervene with ICE. This should not be a surprise, and it should not be independent reporters that are having to discover this stuff and put the FBI's feet to the fire. They're not doing the research. What is your take on the Signal chat? Was this a singular big thing, or is this just one of many chats that you think we need to be concerned about?
Oh, Harrison, I've been reporting on the Signal chats for almost a year. The Signal chats were not a surprise at all. And just because it was a surprise to mass conservatives, you know, it doesn't mean that it hasn't been going on. This organizing has been going on for over a year now, ever since Trump took office. And I'll give you one better. And this is on my Substack right now. I just posted it this morning. Months ago, I actually found an archive of far left propaganda in the form of zines that are being used to facilitate ICE reporting and these Signal groups all over the country. An interesting thing about these zines is they all listed local hotlines that people could actually call to report ICE sightings in their neighborhoods. What happens when you call to report to a hotline is that the report gets facilitated out to the Signal group. So it's not just Minnesota. It's like there is a nationwide network of hotlines and organizations that are sponsoring these hotlines that people can actually go to look to where they are the ones facilitating all of this anti-ICE organizing and the reporting into the Signal groups in the first place. Just this morning on my Substack, which is Carlin, carlyn.substack.com, I posted an entire database of the propaganda that's being distributed in the real world all over the country, a list of all the hotlines, and a list of all of the organizations that are sponsoring those hotlines. And I'm calling for the public's help here. I need help in going through all this stuff because I have been trying to get this information into the hands of journalists for months. I personally don't have time to track all this stuff down, but I promise you, if people go to my Substack and they find that list of organizations that is linked in that article, they will be able to track down who is funding these Signal groups, who's coordinating these Signal groups, and how nationwide across all major cities these people are working together to impede the operations of ICE. And that image right there is a picture. That is actually me finding one of these zines in the real world. I found that when I was undercover the last time in San Francisco. And so I know this information is being used in the real world. I know these hotlines are coordinated, and I'm pretty sure that a lot of them are being funded by local and state government.
Of course they are. I mean, and we know that they're involved. I just retweeted one of the videos that you did saying, I know how all the anti-ICE Signal groups are connected nationwide and how to find their funding sources. Again, we obviously can't rely on the Republicans to do anything about this. I mean, it sucks because they could so easily, and that is the obvious solution. Short of that, what can people do? Like, because I've been encouraging people to go do what Cam Higby did, what you do, go find these Signal chats, publish them. It's like, why not? What is there to lose? But I also, you know, I don't want to be encouraging people to do something if, you know, it's going to get them doxxed or whatever. So how do you do this safely? How do you, you know, find your way into these groups? Because I think this is something everybody listening to us could be doing. I mean, just do it on your lunch break, you know, find these Signal chats or find these social media groups and make an account and join them and just see what they're up to. Like, it's so easy. I don't think there's any risk. Is there a risk in this? What do people need to know? And how do people do their own research? Because we cannot rely on mainstream media. We cannot rely on the Republicans. It's up to us, folks. We got to get involved. How do people do that?
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Harrison. I think everyone can do this research. And in fact, in my community, through my YouTube channel and my Substack, we are actually coordinating with many people in my community who do go undercover to gather this information. They go into the Signal group. Some of them sign up for far left groups in their neighborhood. They go to their meetings. They track everything they're doing. They make it available to the public so that we can all see. Anyone can learn how to do this. But the thing of it is the first thing people need to do is learn how to speak the language of the left. You have to learn what their language actually means, because they do speak in a completely different language. That's what I teach on my YouTube channel every single day. I have free resources on my Substack to be able to help people out to learn the language. Because if you don't understand what they're saying, you're not going to be able to articulate the correct information. I do want to warn people, though, there are different spectrums of the left where some groups are not dangerous at all, and it's not going to put you in any harm to try to infiltrate them. But when we're talking about the far left, and the far left are the ones doing the majority of this anti-ICE organizing, it can be very dangerous to go to these groups in person, especially if you don't know how to speak their language, because they're going to be able to figure out who you are very quickly. And so I would really caution people to be very careful. I've heard from multiple conservatives that want to go to these anti-ICE protests and they want to disrupt them or do pro-ICE protesting. And while I understand the inclination, people also have to understand that they will physically assault you. They are very hyped up. We've seen them physically assault multiple people. We've seen them go after Cam Higby and Nick Sorter. They pretend to jump on cars to try to pretend that they got hit by cars and stuff like that to get them in trouble. They physically throw things at them, like water bottles that are frozen. You have to be very aware of what you're getting into if you go to these things in person. And so I would highly recommend that, like, everyone sign up to go to their organizing calls, listen in to them online, create secret identities. I have like 15 secret identities that I use to go into these meetings all the time. And so anyone can do this, but you also have to know what you're dealing with when it comes to dealing with the left.
And it seems like the younger the groups are, the more extreme they are. At least that's what I've gotten. That's a sense I've gotten from your videos in particular. It's like you had a video recently of college students, and that was radical. And then there's high school students inside that. And of course, we've noticed this with the Tesla protests and everything else. I know we talked about this last time you were on, that the older people are the ones out there still waving signs and protesting, and the younger people aren't doing that, not because they don't believe or don't, you know, oppose the government, but because they've given up on protesting. Is that true? And what sort of trends do you see demographically in terms of younger people being more radical or older people being disconnected with the reality of what they're involved in? How do you see the demographics of the left right now?
Yeah, so certainly on the left, there are multiple different types of people. You've got like your old hippie communists that have always been communists, but they're not really dangerous. They're kind of like harmless. They go out and they hold their signs and they chant their chants and whatever. But the younger generation, and I'm really talking about maybe like 30s and under here, they have grown up in an extreme far left environment that's been heavily influenced by the post 9/11 era, by Occupy Wall Street, and by leftist propaganda that is circulating in these far left ecosystems and communities that is much more extreme than anything the old hippie communists ever read during that kind of their tenure. And so I would say you're absolutely correct that younger people are more extreme in their thinking. And what I will also tell you is a very important trend that I've seen over the last year is an explicit rejection of nonviolent protests. So right. I've seen now over multiple leftist groups, they're saying the No Kings protests are great for a day, but they don't really accomplish anything because they're nonviolent. We need to get more violent. We need to get more aggressive. This is what they're writing in their manifestos. And the Trump administration has only emboldened them in this aspect as well, because after Trump issued the executive order declaring them domestic terrorists, Antifa basically came out and started publishing, and they called Trump's bluff. They said, oh yeah, Trump, you want to declare us domestic terrorists? Well, we're going to come at you more aggressively. We're going to do more activism. So Antifa doubled down, and Trump never followed through on the executive order to declare them domestic terrorists. Like, almost no one in Antifa has actually been arrested, even though we know exactly who they are. They're the people protesting outside the hotels, they're the people destroying things. Like, it's very, very clear based on their operational tactics who these people are, but they're not being arrested. And so every day that Trump allows this to go on, the far left is getting more emboldened to engage in destructive behavior, vandalism, violence, and they are now viewing it as part of their standard operating procedure.
Yeah, and of course, that's going to happen. I mean, Trump is responding in the worst way possible. If you just don't do anything, that's one thing. But if you act tough and then don't follow through, of course, you're going to embolden the people that you're, you know, trying to fight against. And I wonder, just like, are all of these things performative from the Trump administration? Because he has this big press conference where he declares them domestic terrorists. Nothing changes. Nothing happens. Their funding isn't rounded up. The networks aren't. I mean, just nothing has happened. I think the same thing with the ADL, and Kash Patel makes this big thing saying we are no longer working with the ADL. According to the ADL, they're still working hand in glove. So it's just like they just make these announcements. Are they just blatantly lying, or are they actually doing anything? Have you heard anything that's been done against Antifa since they were declared domestic terrorists at all?
No, not a single thing. And to be honest with you, the Trump administration is lying. They're saying they're funded by these big funding sources. I'm sorry, but that's just not true. Antifa's funded by mutual aid. They fund themselves through small cash donations. And it's actually funny because when Trump made this big deal about them printing these beautiful signs, Antifa actually responded with videos showing how they print the signs on their home printers at home. Like, wow. These are not big funded organizations. And so it's like the Trump administration, I think, is completely unhinged from reality in terms of how the left is operating, how they're organizing. They are advancing a narrative that does not actually mirror what is going on. And so the Trump administration needs to start looking at what the far left is actually doing, because the spreading of the propaganda, the left literally makes fun of the right all the time. We're starting to see this with the left is coming out and saying, you idiots, we're not paid protesters. We do all this for free, yeah. Which is actually the truth. And until people start to accept that, then I don't know what else can be done in this situation.
Well, I would think something would be a good move. I mean, anything perhaps would be a beneficial move, because right now, I mean, Trump talks tough. I went off for a while today about the latest post where he says, surprisingly, Jacob Frey is not going to work with ICE, even though we had a lovely conversation about it. And it's like, does he not realize the left just lies to his face and he buys it and it makes him look like an idiot? And then you've got this. Tim Walz finishes meeting with Tom Homan, demanding swift, significant reduction in immigration agents. So they're not being cowed. They're not, you know, backing down from their demands. They're upping their demands. They're becoming more aggressive. Is there any risk, Carlin, that an aggressive push from Trump, he declares the Insurrection Act, he sends in troops, would that not just stoke the fire? Is the left, do they want that, or are they scared of that? I can't really figure it out. What do you think, just from your taking of the temperature? Let's say Trump today goes, you know what, I've had enough, I'm sending troops in. Would that crush the protest, or would that make it spiral out of control?
I truly don't know, Harrison. And the thing of it is, I think if Trump had declared the Insurrection Act maybe a week or two ago, we would be in a much different situation than we're in now. I think potentially it could force it to spiral out of control and just get much bigger. But I also think that the only way to actually stop this is the use of overwhelming force to quell the organizing that's going on and to stop their momentum dead in the tracks. And so it's like the Trump administration, because they have ignored this problem for so long and they put it off for so long, they are now in a really difficult, almost lose-lose situation where I truly do not know how they can even get their hands around this. And this is the problem with lying to yourself about what is going on the far left, ignoring the problem, ignoring how serious it is, making fun of them, just owning the libs on Twitter. That doesn't solve actual problems. And all the time that conservatives spend doing this stuff where they're just making fun of the libs or whatever, they are wasting time and energy that they could have used to solve the problem. Again, I cannot emphasize this enough. This is not a problem that jumped up overnight. They have been doing this organizing for over a year. It started very, very small and then just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And it was ignored for the entire past year by the Trump administration, by conservative media, by most independent journalists. I was one of the only people covering it for months leading up to the June protests in Los Angeles. And this is what happens, folks. This is what happens when you ignore problems and you expect them to go away because you think the left is just a bunch of silly college kids that are going to grow up and get a job someday. No, they're not. They're ideologues. This is their identity. This is what they believe. And they are deeply committed to overthrowing what they believe is the capitalist United States government and abolishing the Constitution. So can we all please get our heads in the game? Because things are about to get very bad if we don't.
Very powerful stuff. I absolutely agree. There's a story on InfoWars, quote, "It's insurgency." Former Spec Ops soldier exposes Minneapolis, quote unquote, protest, saying what's unfolding in Minneapolis right now is not a protest. It's low level insurgency infrastructure built by people who've clearly studied the playbook. That's the opinion of Eric Schwalm, a former Green Beret with experience in Afghanistan and Iraq. I mean, whether you want to call it a color revolution, an insurgency of some sort, clearly the goal, the ultimate goal, is the overthrow of the United States. And the longer it goes on, the harder it gets to solve. I wanted to ask you about this. It was actually posted by Data Republican, but it's a post from SignalGate admin Moss, also known as Fugu, basically saying communists have a critical weakness in all of their solidarity rhetoric. Their psychology cannot handle the existence of opposing opinions, let alone spies. Just one person infiltrating breaks down all their trust in operations. If that doesn't restore agency and motivate you, I don't know what will. What's your take on that opinion, that these communist groups are vulnerable to infiltration and disruption if you can sort of start arguments inside?
Yeah, well, generally speaking, I don't trust anything Data Republican says. I found them spreading misinformation on multiple circumstances, so I think they're a terrible source of information personally. I don't actually think that's an accurate view of how the left operates either. Listen, a lot of these leftist activists, they know each other in person. And so while it is true that sometimes you can create a little bit of infighting, it's not going to be significant enough to actually break down the whole group. Because this is a fun fact for people. The left actually has an entire manual about how they deal with conflict. I've seen it. It's about this thick. So they actually have ways that they deal with conflict within the group. They deal with disagreements in the group that if they do have a little bit of infighting, they tend to get over it very quickly. So I think that you can create different infighting between different leftist groups. For example, Antifa does not like the Party for Socialism and Liberation. Revolutionary Socialists do not like the Democratic Socialists of America. They consider them to be kind of their biggest enemies because some are revolutionaries, some are reformers. It's a whole big thing I can spend hours talking about. So you can create dissension between the groups, but creating dissension in the groups oftentimes doesn't happen because these groups are they're collectivists. This is a collectivist mindset. And so they know each other in person. They just go talk to each other in person.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's very good to know. Still worth a shot. I still think it's worth a shot. I think if you want to go in and, follow the CIA's manual for simple sabotage and, I think it's, why not? Again, my guest is Carlin Borashenko, decodetheleft.com, carlin.substack.com. That's carlyn.substack.com. And of course, follow her on X. Last minute, I wish we had more time. We're going to have to get you on again, especially if these operations continue to grow. Last minute, floor is yours. What do you want people to know about what's happening in Minnesota, Minneapolis, and where it goes from here?
Yeah, I really want people to understand that we are about to see this exported nationwide. J.D. Vance was absolutely incorrect in his speech the other day when he said this is a problem that's unique to Minnesota. It's in Minnesota because Minnesota is actually where modern day Antifa in the United States began back in 1986 in the Sharp Movement, which is the skinheads for against racial prejudice. That became the Anti-Racist Action Network, which was a nationwide network of decentralized non-hierarchical cells that evolved into what is modern day Antifa. It started in Minnesota. That's why it's starting there, and we see so much leftist stuff there. But Antifa is currently working on exporting this all over the country. And yes, it is in red states, too. This is not just a Democrat problem. This is a Republican problem as well. And until people start taking this seriously and really honing in on how the left is organizing and what they're doing, then we are totally lost.
Absolutely incredible stuff. Carlin Borashenko, decodetheleft.com, carlin.substack.com. The fire is rising. The longer we wait to fight it, the harder it's going to be to put out, folks. Follow her on X at Dr. Carlin B, Dr. Carlin B on X. Thank you, Carlin. Amazing stuff.
Now, this new product is incredible. It's from our sponsor, Bigly, at thealexjonesstore.com. Optimal Human, you love the green powder. Super nutrient, the very best out there. Well, this is optimal human nootropic called Mind Fuel. Introducing Mind Fuel, a super healthy, super strong energy nootropic adaptogen, which doesn't make you sick, doesn't have a letdown. It is incredible. Not just a few of the bottles. Look how many bottles are in there. And I only drink about half a bottle a day. It's so strong. Look at that right there, ladies and gentlemen. So that's what comes in each box of this. and it is simply amazing. Osmo Human Nootropic Mind Fuel is here. This clean, caffeine-free energy shot is designed for clear thinking, steady focus, and zero compromise. It's time to abandon sugary energy drinks and stimulant heavy formulas in favor of clean, functional, nootropic-based energy. Zero calories, sugar-free, no crash, no blood sugar spike, can be used daily without any guilt. Caffeine-free formula, smooth, clean energy, ideal for caffeine-sensitive users and late-day use. It's also got all these other incredible compounds like citicoline, alpha-GPC, GABA, supports mental clarity and focus. It appeals to both biohackers and holistic consumers. High-quality electrolytes and B vitamins. More than a brain shot, true functional fuel. Optimal Human Nootropic Mind Fuel, that's the name of the product, isn't just another energy product. It's a smarter alternative for consumers who demand clarity, control, and clean performance without compromise. Get 25% off for life when you become a subscriber, canceling time for free. Get Mind Fuel now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you've never tried the original superfood greens, Optimal Human, you really want to get this as well. It's the best green food I've ever had at thealexjonesstore.com. The widest selection of Patriot apparel, all sorts of cool collectible knives and more. And that's what funds us, and that's what does this. And I really appreciate your support because I can't do it without you. So I want to commend and thank the listeners. But just like I steered you right on gold and silver 2.5 years ago, I got out of the market before that. I said, now's the time. I was totally right. Just like I steer you right on politics, these products are incredible. Get our ultramethylene blue. It is the best in the market. Our Shilajit's the best. Our Irish Hemos is the best. Our turmeric is the strongest. Ultimate turmeric. TheAlexJonesStore.com. You are missing out. You don't get it. I want to thank those that have supported. I want to challenge those that haven't. What are you waiting for?
Just what I needed for my morning jog.
Working 12 to 13 hours a day, Mind Fuel keeps me on my toes and in the action.
Try this energy shot for a boost like no other. Power your mind and body today.
Harrison, I am so excited to talk to you. I want to plug the Irish Hemos. It was a big game changer for me. I was having a lot of like thermoregulation issues, like morning severe chills and cold in the morning. All that stopped with the Hemos because it's a thyroid issue, and the Hemos has that iodine to heal your thyroid.
Isn't that amazing?
The methylene blue, life changing. I love it. I don't need caffeine anymore. It's amazing, but I'm trying to be quick.
It's all right. Hey, when you're plugging, we got all the time in the world.
I love his supplement formulas. I am an acupuncturist. I have a master's degree in Chinese medicine, and he's got some really good formulas put together, and they work really well. I really appreciate it. I stopped taking all of my other stuff that I was taking, and I just take a lot of you guys' stuff. I mean, because I love you, and I want to support everything you guys are doing, but the formulas are good.
You can only find out for yourself what effects these things will have. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
The health of American children is in crisis.
When we're talking about an autoimmune disease crisis, shouldn't we look closest at the one product designed to alter our immune system for life? There'd be one easy study to rule it out. Compare vaccinated children to unvaccinated children.
As fate would have it, Dell met Marcus Servos.
He agreed to do the study.
This could be one of the most valuable studies in the field.
4.47 times the amount of speech disorders.
Learning issues, developmental delays.
Over 4 times more likely to have an asthma diagnosis.
5.5 times risk. Amongst the unvaccinated group, there were 0.
If this is true, we are systematically making kids sick, very sick.
Only one problem, they're not going to publish it.
They left us with no choice.
I'm going to bring hidden cameras so that no matter what happens at this dinner, I can prove it happened.
What do you think about the study you guys have done?
Well, I think it's a good study.
Is there a way they could do the study better?
Not that I put it out just how it is. It's the right thing to do, but I just don't want to.
Somebody's going to come back and they're going to say the study is flawed.
The unpublished Henry Ford analysis is fundamentally flawed.
Because there's a political agenda to it. I'm not going to do it. Publishing something like that, might as well retire. I'd be finished.
Sick. It's really sick.
I mean, I'm obviously, like, really emotional.
This is an inconvenient study for the entire vaccine agenda.
And inconveniencestudy.com is where you can find and watch that documentary for absolutely free. It is the latest from Del Bigtree, who joins me in studio. Now you can follow Del on X at Del Bigtree, thehighwire.com, and icandecide.org. Del, thank you so much for joining us today.
Harrison, thanks for having me. It's great being here.
Well, it's my pleasure to have you here. And there's been a lot of developments in your realm of vaccines and MAHA. And as much as I feel like I say this every time we talk about MAHA, they're having success. As frustrated as I've been about a lot of stuff with the Trump administration, I cannot fault MAHA for just nose to the grindstone, hitting the ground running, and really achieving some great things.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the most effective part of the Trump administration right now is Robert Kennedy Jr., MAHA, an amazing team around him in Jay Bhattacharya at NIH, which is just poetic justice, given that we'll be talking today about some of the FOIA requests that have come in. But originally, when you had the Great Barrington Declaration come out and tens of thousands of doctors around the world saying we should not be locking down, this is not the way they handle this, you had this email between Francis Collins, heads of NIH, and Tony Fauci saying this must be stopped, this must be destroyed. So there's real poetic justice because Jay Bhattacharya, obviously one of the signature authors of the Great Barrington Declaration, now he's got Francis Collins' job. He's running NIH.
It's a beautiful thing.
I mean, it's a beautiful thing. I mean, it's something you see in movies. You never really see it happen in politics, yet it is happening. Of course, I love what Dr. Marty McCarry is doing at FDA. You've got Mehmet Oz making, you know, amazing changes to the Medicaid, Medicare program. Of course, at the top of that is Robert Kennedy Jr., who I was director of communications for when he ran for president. So I'm really proud of him and the work that he's doing over there.
It's absolutely amazing. And it's not to say he's getting everything he wants. Obviously, there are massive headwinds or, you know, forces pushing back against him in very big ways. But he's having success. And again, it's just the one thing where it's like every week or so we get a little boost of dopamine when they release a statement about vaccines or admit something that we've been saying forever and that they've always denied. And there's been a couple, you know, stories like that of admitting that 10 kids died from you know, the FDA admitted from the COVID vaccine, or that the COVID vaccine causes myocarditis, and every kid who had myocarditis had gotten the vaccine. No kids who were unvaccinated.
Yeah, huge study out of Spain showed that millions of kids they looked at and said not a single child got myocarditis or pericarditis from the illness, because that's what we were being told, right? We've been told by the former HHS secretaries and our former government that, you know, the vaccine is safer, that it doesn't cause as much myocarditis or pericarditis as the disease itself. Can we just take a moment to just break down how completely unscientific that is?
Because that's all
insane. Because I've argued this with, you know, reporters at New York Times, Washington Post that would make that statement to me. I was like, okay, Let's be reasonable, because I'm a journalist. I'm not a doctor, but let me just take that at face value. First of all, the vaccine is turning your body into the spike protein manufacturing plant, correct? And I would say this to a reporter. It doesn't give you the full virus. It's not the entire COVID virus. It's just the spike protein, which we know is the most deadly, dangerous part of the COVID virus. It's not the weakest part, which is where we usually make a vaccine. Usually we inject, I always say, if you think of a virus like a tank and there's the howitzer, you don't put the howitzer inside of you. You just make the wheels of the tank, right?
Right.
So that if, you know, when the body attacks, you know, it'll just take out the wheels so the virus is destroyed. You don't put the most dangerous part and make your body start reproducing the most dangerous, but literally the bioweapon of this virus. You don't make that what your body's producing, but that's what they did. But I would say to a journalist, all things being equal, let's say it's the same spike protein that's in the virus that is in the vaccine. Okay. That would be like, yes. Okay. Now in one situation, I might randomly catch this virus and breathe it in. In the other, I'm going to inject every single person on the planet and mandate that they take it. What are the odds? What is the increased odds that you're going to have spike protein in your body? Is it more if you're vaccinating everybody and guaranteeing they get it, or it's randomly selected and they go, oh my God, I never thought of that. Now let's go to the fact that they brag that there's more antigen response, that there's a higher load when you're vaccinated versus breathing it in. So now you get even more. They're bragging, you're getting more spike protein. Now let's talk about the fact that the vaccine doesn't work very well. In fact, after 15 weeks, it is negative efficacy, meaning you're more likely to catch the virus because it's primed your body wrong. So now you were not just guaranteed to have spike protein in your body once, you're on 10 freaking boosters, which is way more than you'd ever get in nature. So all things being equal, if it's the same spike protein, which is what they promised it was, you're getting more contact, you're in more danger. And if that is what, and I would say to every reporter, are we agreed that the spike protein is what causes myocarditis and pericarditis? Right. Yes. Then how in God's name is it possible that a natural infection is causing more cases when the only thing we're doing is mandating this injection and forcing it onto people? Lastly, as you've reported, we all have, and Dr. Robert Malone, inventor of the technology, has said, we created a mutant version of the spike protein using pseudouridine, inserting it so that it can't die.
Right.
So unlike the very weak spike protein that our body attacks and kills it immediately, this persists. It stays alive. In fact, they've studied people up to 750 days, I think is the last study.
Right.
In fact, it just depends on how long ago you got it and how long the study is. They're still finding people whose bodies are creating spike protein now 2-3 years after being injected, something that never happens in the natural world. Your body would have beat it. So all of that being said, that is the explanation for why when Spain does a study, we find out more children are dying from myocarditis and pericarditis. In fact, the only ones are getting it from the vaccine. And you're right. The FDA finally looks at the VAERS system. And this is what people are like, oh, my God, Robert Kennedy Jr., what are you talking about? The VAERS system is the only capture system, vaccine adverse events reporting system. This is the system that doctors, if you suddenly die 4 days after a vaccine, you're supposed to report a VAERS. Not sure if it was the vaccine, but sure was in close proximity to the moment I just gave them this vaccine, or they have a seizure, or all of those things. That's what VAERS is there for. Well, what we just found out is finally, with Robert Kennedy Jr. as the head of HHS, he has, you know, his scientists go and start calling everybody that reported dying, that their child died after the vaccination. Call them. Let's get a full report. Explain to us. We're going to look at your case. And there was, you know, I think hundreds of cases in there. But in the end, they whittled it down and said, for sure, for absolute positive sure, we have cross, you know, sectioned this. We've had people from all sides of the investigation look at it. 10 of these kids definitely died from the vaccine. And so we are way beyond this didn't affect anybody. And, you know, what I think is mind-blowing is you imagine, didn't the Biden administration do that? Didn't our health, isn't the entire point of VAERS is that when you're seeing deaths in a totally experimental product, you admitted this was an experimental product, you took it out of its safety trials early under emergency use authorization, which means you were turning our entire nation into a test group. We are not using a product that has been proven to be safe. So now we should be monitoring more thoroughly than we ever have in the history of mankind. This captures systems, the VAERS system. So if we see deaths being reported of our children, you would expect FDA is calling those parents immediately, reaching out immediately. Instead, when we interview people like Maddie DeGarry, paralyzed after the vaccine, you know, you look at all the great work that React 19, I think you've had some of them on, a great nonprofit, for all the people injured by this vaccine. When some of them were in the trials, Maddie DeGarry was in the trials for Pfizer, and no one called her. She reported it to Pfizer. She reported the FDA, said, I am paralyzed after this vaccine. Jeez. From the trials, no one ever called her, didn't care, didn't matter. So now you finally have an administration doing what we believe should have been happening and was happening, we thought was happening the whole time. Call the people that are being injured. Call the ones. Isn't this what we're paying for? Aren't we supposed to be making sure this product is safe for everyone to take? Nobody cared. No one in the government prior to this administration ever cared how many people's lives were destroyed by this experimental product. So yeah, huge changes. Maybe not like, you know, I think there's people that wanted to see Robert Kennedy Jr. erase the vaccine program upon arrival.
Although he's you know. I mean, what he's doing is not far from that. I mean, the way that he's destroyed the childhood vaccine schedule, absolutely massive. Obviously, you know, all of these studies coming out about the COVID vaccine. I mean, it really, like, hearing you just lay it out like that, it was such a crime that was committed against us. And we really have to get justice for this. How close do you think we are, or are we even moving in the direction of getting justice for these people who knowingly lied to us? Going back to what you were saying about the Great Barrington Declaration, if they didn't know that it was true what they were saying, they wouldn't have tried to shut it down, if that makes sense, right?
Yeah. Or
if they were actually concerned about whether the vaccine was safe, they would have followed up on the reports. So clearly, their actions, the emails they send, collaborating, they knew what they were doing was wrong. They did it anyway, and they took steps to cover up what they were doing because they knew it was wrong. Are we ever going to get justice for this?
I don't know. I mean, I just saw a very troubling podcast with Rand Paul, who I think has been at the forefront of bringing the hearings you would need to bring.
Right.
He has been all over Tony Fauci in the middle of COVID. Yep. Of course, the big breaking story right now, I think it was just last week, you had a FOIA request that came in that showed that Tony Fauci had seen the data all the way back in 2021, brought it up with Rochelle Walensky and Francis Collins, saying, look at all this data coming out of Israel. Clearly, they all understood that natural immunity, having the infection and having being naturally immune, was better than being vaccinated. And they made a concerted effort to say, don't tell the American public. In fact, we're going to tell you, you have to get vaccinated, even if you've already been infected, because the natural infection isn't as strong. It was a total lie. We now know it was a lie. And you have Rand Paul in the center of it that was, you know, had, you know, Fauci under a microscope talking about gain of function. Where did this virus come from? It sure looks like it came from the Wuhan lab. And we've got FOIA requests showing that we know Fauci was in an email chain with top scientists that were saying this looks like it came from a lab. Yet, you know, I think it was like literally 2 weeks later, those same scientists all write an article saying the only explanation is natural, you know, is a natural source. It can't be lab created. So whatever happened in meetings with Fauci, his finger is in the middle of this, and Rand Paul is all over it. But he's saying publicly right now that it does appear that President Trump does not have a stomach. Someone, Pam Bondi, someone in there is holding back from bringing actual indictments. He said, you know, Bobby Kennedy and I are working together. We want to bring these guys, you know, up on charges. We want to test whether the auto pen should protect Tony Fauci. Can you just give a blanket? We don't know why, but he is immune to any prosecution for all reasons from here to forward. We've never seen anything like that. So you have Rand Paul, you know, drooling over the opportunity. He's got Fauci dead to rights. We've saw Fauci say it wasn't gain of function, yet it sure appears that now that is exactly what was being funded through NIAID. So I think you've got the smoking guns. I think that you've got the right people in place. You know, why is the administration not moving forward to that? I mean, I guess we'd, you know, only President Trump and maybe Pam Bondi knows right now.
Is it the Trump administration, or is it the institutional authority that Fauci still wields? Because, I mean, he was the head of his department since the 80s. Like, he had built it around himself, right? So I can understand how people who got their first job from him and have been there for 20 years might want to protect him. Is it the Trump administration's shortfalls, or is it the institutional control that Fauci and his compatriots still wield?
I mean, I don't know. Is there a difference?
I guess not. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, I think when you elect someone like President Trump, when you send a Robert Kennedy Jr. in, when you send, you know, I mean, a lot of these guys are coming in as, you know, outsiders. And, you know, I was lucky to be in some of the early meetings as the transition was happening. You know, Bobby had not been confirmed yet, but I was still standing by his side. I worked with him all the way to the point he put his hand on that Bible inside the Oval Office. But, you know, there was a lot of outsiders that were brought in by this administration because they didn't want that sort of corporate capture to affect choices. But, you know, Epstein, which you guys are covering, there's a lot of things we're like, why aren't we following all the way through? I don't know. Yeah. I don't have the answers to that. I'm as sort of shocked by some of this. But I think that constant pressure and ultimately what Robert Kennedy Jr. is doing, and what I think is the most important part, it's the most important part of what you do, Harrison, what Alex is doing, what I am doing, is it, we are only here. We are only seeing the changes that are happening because the court of public opinion is now
right.
in charge.
Yeah.
It's our opinions of what's happening. It's our pressure now. It's what we are demanding. So you said, as I sat down here, there's no issue like the vaccine issue. Vaccines is crumbling.
Absolutely.
You know, we would not be here for 50 years from now. I don't think Robert Kennedy Jr. is HHS secretary for 50 more years if we didn't all go through COVID, if the right. pharmaceutical industry and its capture of our government didn't so far overstep its place, if we didn't see how pharma was working with, you know, the WHO, the WEF, and all of these globalist organizations to rob us of our sovereignty. That was a wake-up call. And one of the really cool things of, you know, being around, you know, the Trump team was they saw the same thing we did.
Right.
His not winning that last election, having 4 years to think about what he'd do when he'd come back and watch America plummet and almost burn its constitution in COVID woke this nation up and gave a mandate beyond just a popular vote, a mandate for change to this administration that in many ways we are seeing great action. But, you know, we're pointing out some of the, you know, the things that are annoying. I think so many people would like to see Fauci indicted. I always say this, though. I don't want Robert Kennedy Jr. spending his time trying to get people arrested. I want him changing the system. I want him doing what he's doing. I want him getting the chemicals out of our children's food. I want the lead and the arsenic out of our baby food. I want fluoride out of our water. We're looking at EPA is going to finally do real, you know, investigations into that. You do see a look at glyphosate and, you know, there's two tracks happening. You see an open conversation appears to be happening between EPA and Robert Kennedy Jr. Meanwhile, you've got, you know, the Trump administration pushing Supreme Court to look at possibly giving liability protection. So it's hard to explain all of it.
Yeah.
But I can tell you, I know Robert Kennedy Jr. very well, and that guy's heart is as pure as it gets as far as what he's trying to achieve there.
I've said for a while that, like, if you can't trust that guy, you can't trust anybody. Like, he is like if anybody has dedicated their lives to a movement, if he has been fooling us the whole time, then nobody can be trusted.
Right. Let's just throw ourselves off a cliff.
Yeah. At this point, like, you might as well. But that's such an interesting thing you said about COVID. And again, it's a reminder of why it's important that we do this, because so often the overwhelming power of these conspiracies that we talk about leaves people feeling demoralized. But the fact is, like, they pushed too far. They went too hard. They thought they could get away with it. They thought they'd have us all locked down. I love how Anthony Fauci still to this day refers to this year as COVID year six, as if they were going to reset the calendar based on their operation. And yet what it did was woke so many people up to it and has become a major vector of attack for them that they might not survive with the way that RFK Jr. is going after the vaccine program. The pesticide thing is a whole different thing that I'm concerned about. Yeah. But at least when it comes to vaccines, they went too far. They pushed too far and it woke up humanity to what they were doing. And at the end of the day is going to you know, contribute to freeing us from their system rather than them succeeding in their operation. I wouldn't have read The Real Anthony Fauci by RFK Jr. If he wasn't ordering me to wear a mask. And that book blew my mind, and I still think about it continuously, because that is the rot that RFK Jr. is up against right now, and it is thorough and very well established. So what else is coming up for RFK Jr.? What more surprises do we have, and what do you think is his next big step? Because, again, he really does seem to be chipping away at the vaccine facade and is doing major, major damage to it.
Well, I think he would want me to say he's not doing damage to it. He's just bringing science to it. And he's bringing the opportunity to choose. He isn't destroying the vaccine program. He is cutting the mandate in half is what he just did. Huge, the biggest shift for sure. I would, you know, I think from the pharmaceutical perspective, he's doing damage. But really all he's doing is saying, I'm going to reduce 54 total injections down to about 23 injections. They're saying, oh,
the madman, right, the radical.
It's totally unscientific. That is the same schedule Germany has. It's the schedule Denmark has. So every time they're like, oh my God, you're going to bring back smallpox. You're going to bring back polio. There's no smallpox in Germany or Denmark. There's no smallpox and polio. And then you'll hear, well, those are totally different nations. They don't have the same population. Well, they have about the same population as Kansas, so why are we forcing mandates of vaccines on Kansas? In fact, they have the same population of almost all of America except for Los Angeles and New York City.
Right.
And those two places are going to vaccinate the living hell out of themselves no matter what Robert Kennedy right. does. So I don't think we have anything to worry about. But ultimately, I do want to point out that he isn't removing vaccines from, you know, existence. He's saying there's no mandate for now. I think it's he's taken it from like 11 vaccines down to 6 or 7 that are mandated. And I think for me, it's not going far enough in that I just want to, I really want to mirror the Denmark schedule, which is they have the right to choose on every single vaccine. It's
right.
the only place where, for you know, for whatever the powers that be that are in there, he is tiptoeing along. We could get into some of the science. I know why they're worried about removing a mandate from measles vaccine or chickenpox vaccine, because you will see a real uptick in measles and chickenpox, something that I dream of the day that that actually becomes acceptable again. Mm. I think we're a healthier society when our children catch chickenpox. We're a healthier society when our children caught the measles. There's many, many studies that show that. Lower rates of cancer, lower rates of heart disease, all that simply because our immune systems used to be primed right at the time right. where we were developing it and we were strong enough to handle it. Instead, this vaccine program has manipulated nature, and we're seeing the results of it. As Robert Kennedy Jr. has pointed out, as my film An Inconvenient Study is really getting into, this is the sickest nation of children in the world, certainly in the industrialized world. It's the sickest generation of children we've ever had. We've gone from 12.8% chronic disease in our children in the 1980s, just over 40 years ago, to now we have over 54% of our children have chronic disease. And at the heart of the study, the Henry Ford study, the center of an inconvenient study, my film, I challenged the head of infectious disease at Henry Ford Health, prove me wrong. Do a study comparing health outcomes of vaccinated versus unvaccinated kids in every health category in that study. It's an unpublished study. He refused to publish it. Henry Ford refused to publish it. They've threatened a lawsuit against me for even putting this film out. So I want to be very careful about my language.
Right.
This is an unpublished study. It's my opinion that the reason they did not publish the study is the results were so incredibly damning for the vaccinated. 2.5 times more likely to have a chronic disease. You were 6 times more likely to have a neurodevelopmental disorder.
Oh, wow.
6 times more likely to have an autoimmune disease if you were vaccinated compared to the unvaccinated. And they do a graph. And remember, this is Henry Ford Health. This is a scientist that in undercover footage that is a part of the film, in a dinner I had with him, he admits, I believe in vaccines. I am the reason we force vaccinate every employee of Henry Ford Health. And so this was a study done by a devout, personally stated pro-vaccine scientist. It was not tilted in our direction. If there was a bias, it had to be in the vaccinated. And instead, what they showed is within 10 years, a vaccinated child, 57% of them would have a chronic disease, whereas only 17% would have of the unvaccinated would have a chronic disease. So lastly, I think Robert Kennedy Jr. promised to do a study just like this with the data inside of CDC. I think that data was contaminated. They're cleaning that up, and that's what we're waiting for from Robert Kennedy.
We got to get that done. I mean, it should have been done before we ever shot the vaccines into our arms,
yeah,
but better late than never. Del Bigtree, thank you, sir.
Awesome, man.
You were just telling me that you had a brain disease, and what did you do to fix it?
I found this guy's a functional medicine guy, and he got me on methylene blue, and that instantly stopped everything.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic. And so this guy's injecting in 1890, injects these rats with it, and then does an autopsy on these things. And their brain, the brainstem, every single nerve is blue. So he discovered this methylene blue has an affinity for neuronal tissue. So he says, well, it's sucking into neurons and working in the body. So we started putting it in humans. And we found out it's an MAOI, which helps with depression and anxiety and all kinds of life stress and stuff. It is so incredible that it acts as an electron donor to mitochondria, especially your neuronal mitochondria. So it helps you produce more ATP, and it helps you get rid of this stuff called reactive oxygen species. So you have an oxygen molecule, it should have two hydrogens on it, and like your body's job is to convert stuff into water so you can pee it out. So if you get an oxygen molecule, it's got 4, 5, 1, it's a reactive oxygen, which we call free radicals. So methylene blue goes in there and balances a lot of those things out in your brain and your nervous system. So it is a miracle, and it's been proven for 100 years. You know, it's one of the most well-proven drugs out there.
The strongest medical-grade methylene blue, and this is what I'm on. Total mitochondria cleaning, next-level energy. This is amazing. And you want to know what I'm on? Iris CMOS Shilajit. This right here. Look at that. That is power. I'm on intermittent fasting. I'm 8 to 3 o'clock today. And I stopped eating crap food. Stopped drinking. That's what I'm on right there, baby.